Welcome into the Bulldogs Extra Podcast, presented by us here at the Athens Banner-Herald. It appears that there is a plan in place for the start of football season as coronavirus restrictions continue to be lifted and the Georgia Athletic Department slowly makes its way back into the butt smear confines. We'll get to all that later in the show, along with the serious rape allegations involving former Bulldogs safety and grad assistant Makari Rambo, and what else is happening around the Bulldog Athletics. Of course, we'll get to the University of Georgia and the SEC and how they're taking on racial issues kind of head on here. But first, I am sports editor Ryan Dennis from the Athens Banner-Herald studio here in downtown Athens, along with UGA beat writer Mark Weiser here on a Friday morning. Mark, how are you today?
Doing pretty good. What's rolling over there?
Well, it's a pretty day, I know that. And, I see some people mingling outside. It seems like everybody's trying to get back to a little bit of normal. Of course, a lot of big issues, a lot of serious issues going on in the world today, especially right here in downtown Athens, the University of Georgia, just a few steps away. And it's some issues that have raised the attention of a lot of people, including Georgia coach Kirby Smart. As I mentioned a little while ago, the University System of Georgia recently announced on Wednesday, I do believe, that it has formed a committee that will review all names of buildings and colleges on its 26 university campuses, which clearly involves or includes UGA. I know the Grady School of Journalism is one of the big hot topics. Its namesake, Henry W. Grady, is very controversial for his views of slavery and the Civil War. And Kirby chimed in on his Twitter the other day to support the university system's announcement. His tweet read, "As both the UGA alumni, I fully support the USC Board of Regents and Chancellor's decision to form this committee to study these important issues. This is an important first step in the right direction to help us evaluate our history and work to bring us closer together." So, Mark, what did you take from Kirby's tweet? I know, in his position, he's got to kind of speak out.
Yeah, that tweet was the same statement he had in the release from the University System of Georgia, joined by Jeff Collins, the Georgia Tech quote, our coach with his own quote, as well as Jerry Moorhead and various presidents from the University System of Georgia schools. This is he's the head coach. He's the most prominent employee in the state of Georgia. He was asked to weigh in on that, and oversees a program that has I don't know the exact percentage, but a large percentage of men of color, and some of them might have learned about some of the buildings on campus, and that there's some controversy now that people are asking to. As you're seeing whether statues are coming down, whether flags are being asked to come down or change, buildings on campus are also being looked at. And so there's a five-person committee that's taking a look at all these campuses. And I don't know what the timeline is on that, but it's not – I don't think there's anybody on there from the University of Georgia, let's say, looking at Georgia State, Albany State. There's someone from the UGA Foundation, which is not exactly the same thing, attorney Neil J. Quirk. I know Joni Taylor, you mentioned Grady, the women's basketball coach, Georgia's only black head coach. She indicated on social media that she is going to support or sign a petition that's asking for a change to Grady. Ryan, aren't you a graduate of the Grady School?
Well, not technically, but I do have a lot of friends and colleagues, of course, in this industry that go back to Grady.
You're a UGA grad.
Right? Correctamundo. That is right. But, yes, a lot of our colleagues, I know our editor, Caitlin Stroh Page, went through Grady, as did her husband Fletcher Page, who is back with us now, kind of in the Athens community. So, yes, a lot of friends and colleagues that have gone through there. Yes. And a lot of those colleagues go back to days at the Red and Black, which I know was kind of the catalyst to spearhead a movement with all these building changes and name changes, kind of pointing out that Grady, you know, who was a journalist himself during kind of the Civil War era and when slavery was very prominent, had views that don't really align with, you know, modern culture. And to have his name on a building like that, I know, I can see how it could cause some ill feelings or ill will toward the name of that building. Also, you mentioned Kirby Smart. Just like you said, a lot of black athletes, and you know, you have to, in his position, because when they're on campus here, he's like a really like a father to them. You know, he's got to kind of mentor them and lead them, and you know, he's getting out there and saying what he's saying, which is a very good thing. Also, getting out in front of this is SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, who put out a release yesterday about the Mississippi flag, which I'll paint you a picture here real fast. It has the Confederate battle flag kind of in the top left corner of the flag, with the kind of stars and bars look to the rest of the flag, somewhat similar to how Georgia's flag is, you know, with the three stripes and all. But Georgia does not have the Confederate battle flag like Mississippi does. So Greg Sankey, in a tweet, let me find it here: "It is past time for change to be made to the flag of the state of Mississippi. Our students deserve an opportunity to learn and compete in environments that are inclusive and welcoming to all. In the event there is no change, there will be consideration of precluding Southeastern Conference championship events from being conducted in the state of Mississippi until the state flag is changed." That is from SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. Now, the odd thing is that the team, of course, is named the Rebels there in Mississippi. So will there even be further change, Mark?
I don't know. I mean, I think they're going to work on the flag issue, which has been bubbling in that state, you know, in particular in the last several weeks, I think. And so the SEC weighed in, and I think the leaders of those two schools, Ole Miss and Mississippi State, you know, would prefer it's changed as well. So, you know, SEC throwing their weight around a little bit. Now, you know, they don't have any championships that are permanently, like, you know, you see Nashville as the SEC basketball, for men's basketball tournaments, kind of a fixture there now. Atlanta, obviously, for SEC football. You know, when you're talking about the state of Mississippi, you're talking about some of these rotating championships, you know, that bounce around from state to state. So they're saying if it's not changed, you know, that's where the effect will be. Now, I think the NCAA, you know, has the ability to go further in terms of, you know, giving, you know, early round matchups, types of stuff like that, and also the ability to come out there and, you know, they've already banned these predeterminants to play postseason events, you know, like a regional or something like that, I guess. But, you know, I think he's obviously taking a stand now in this time when so much is being reexamined, and you know, the SEC presidents and Sankey had a conversation yesterday in one of their meetings, weekly meetings, and you know, they put out that release. I guess it was yesterday evening.
And not only change on campus here in Athens, I know the Athens commissioners have decided to take down the Confederate statue that sits right across from the arch. It has stood there for, I know, a long time, but in this times of change, I know they, I believe, are going to move it to either a battlefield or a museum of some sort. I can't remember exactly where they were going to move that, but just part of the change. A big thing kind of, you know, went along the lines of political yesterday on our Facebook page was the Redcoat Band decision to not play the terrorist theme from Gone with the Wind. Gone with the Wind, obviously a historic movie, you know, won a lot of Oscars back in the day, but also a very controversial movie for, I guess, how it kind of didn't exactly expose the problems or severity of slavery in its movie. So it's been a hot topic for years and years about that being played at Georgia games, and the Georgia band director yesterday, Brett Balcom, released a statement on Twitter saying that they will no longer play terrorist theme at the end of Georgia's games. Now, to me, no big issue. They're going to replace it with with Georgia on my mind, which seems logical to do so. Now, of course, a lot of people causing an uproar on Facebook saying they're changing traditions and whatnot. But really, I mean, what did that song have to do with the University of Georgia in the first place? So replacing it with a song like Georgia on My Mind seems to make logical sense to me as a UGA alum.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, when I saw that on, I think it was Wednesday night, I pulled up the song, the original song, I guess, from Gone with the Wind, and it didn't ring. I wasn't familiar with it, and so I, you know, it didn't put two and two together with the Red Coat Band. I didn't remember hearing it, actually, even. But then when the Red Coat Band actually has it online, you can listen to some of their numbers. And I played their version of it, and then I was like, oh, yeah, I've heard that before, you know, because it sounded obviously a little different coming from a marching band. You know, I think, you know, I have some recommendations of kind of, you know, what they need a song to replace it. I'm going to go with R.E.M., Shiny Happy People.
That was
I'll go with...
Didn't we lobby for that to be our intro song to this, but copyrights, we just couldn't get it on the podcast.
I'll go with Outkast, Hey Ya, how about that?
Well, you know, there's a kind of a joking push to get Outkast carved on the Stone Mountain, kind of over the top of... The Civil War monument. That wouldn't cause an uproar, would it?
I mean, you saw Florida also yesterday with an announcement about
Gator Chomp.
No, it's not Gator Chomp.
Gator Bait.
Gator Bait.
Yeah.
Which is a cheer, I guess, right?
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah. So some racial overtones there.
A lot of obviously a lot of actions being taken with the issues that are going on in our country right now, and you know, one of the things I noticed, the comment that kind of sticks in my side and also makes me chuckle just a little bit is that you know, saying that everybody's offended by everything. So, which is kind of hypocritical coming from a person who's offended that they're taking the Gone with the Wind theme away from the Georgia traditions. But, you know, step back for a second and take a look at why it would be removed, and maybe you would not say that everybody's offended by everything, and then you can move on with your life. One other thing I know that didn't directly affect Georgia in particular is the NASCAR. I wrote about it last week in a column. You can head to onlineathens.com, do a search for my name or NASCAR, I guess, and it'll probably pop up. But how they have removed the Confederate flags from all events, which had the same type of responses from audiences about, you know, people being offended by everything. But I think if we take a deeper look and really understand what this is all about, then maybe we can move on as a society and make things better in the world. But that's all I've got on this topic. Mark, you want to weigh in with anything else before we take a quick break?
No. You know, I mean, I don't know what this has to do with Jermaine Johnson and Tyrique Stevenson, but no, I'm just kidding, because we get some people that say stick to football, and I get that to a certain extent, but look, there's no football being played now. We're not privy to these voluntary workouts. So we can talk some football.
Yeah, we'll do that.
This is also, you know, you're seeing some bipartisanship on this. I didn't catch the gentleman's name, but there's a Republican congressman in the State House, I believe, that wants to replace a perhaps it's a Confederate bust there, or like a statue, and replace it with Martin Luther King. So, you know, on both sides of the aisle, there's some kind of reaching out to kind of find some common ground, and I think that's what's going on to a certain extent right now.
And it's violent, I guess, as some of these protests have been and all. There's been some good come out of it, and I think a lot of them has been peaceful. That's the ones we need to look at. That's the stuff that's really making change, and it's what we need in this country. Let's take a quick break. This is the Bulldogs Extra Podcast from the Athens Banner Herald. All right, Mark. Back here on the Bulldogs Extra Podcast, we had some sad news earlier this week. Dwayne Gilbert, who attended, get this, wrap your head around this, 508 straight UGA football games. Passed away on Monday at the age of 93. Did you know, Dwayne, I know we had a story in our paper. I think Chris Starrs, our correspondent here at the Athens Banner Herald, did a story on him a few years back. But did you ever know Dwayne or meet Dwayne? I know they had honored him kind of with some big-time Bulldog supporter honors back in the past. But did you know Dwayne at all?
I did not. He's pretty much the Cal Ripken of Georgia football fans, right?
Exactly. 508 straight, which started, let me look, I believe it was 1974 was his first game, and the streak lasted until 2016. He was even wheeled into South Carolina's, was it Bryce, whatever South Carolina stadium is, he was wheeled into there on a gurney one time. So he
Williams Bryce,
thank you. So he could keep his streak alive. I mean, that's dedication right there.
Yeah, Chris Starrs wrote about him, and there was I was going to tweet it out, but then I thought, like, if it's the first thing someone saw, it might be a little bit seem a little callous. But I want to pull this quote because I thought it was pretty funny. You should tell me you're going to talk about this.
Sorry. While you're looking that up, though, he started 1974 was his first game. I believe the Bulldogs played maybe Georgia Tech on his first. No, his first game was in 1948 when Georgia defeated Georgia Tech 41-13. But his first game came in 1974, I can't remember or can't find who Georgia played that day, but his final Georgia game of that streak was the 2018 SEC Championship game when the Bulldogs fell heartbreakingly to Alabama. And his final game in Sanford Stadium was the week before that game, a 45-21 win over Georgia Tech.
Right.
Now, that wasn't part of the streak, but he continued to go even after his streak had ended.
His stepdaughter said he was once wheeled into a game on a gurney for a short while before leaving, just to maintain his streak. Now, I mean,
you question that?
No, I don't question it. But you know, I mean, I want to honor his memory. But you know, I mean, is that really being true to the streak? I mean, yeah, you really need to. I think for the streak to be to count, you need to be sitting there in the third quarter. I'm just saying.
You think it's like you should make it one half, one full half?
I'm not, it's fine.
Yeah, we're not debating. One thing I know Chris talked about in the article too was that Dwayne Gilbert had a kind of a rivalry with Herschel Scott, who has also passed away from Monroe, who went to 471 consecutive games, which was a 41-year streak. And I know somebody I worked with in the industry who also graduated from the University of Georgia, I believe in the mid-90s, and he was on a streak of about 170 straight games. Now, I don't know how that'll be impacted this year with COVID. I'm sure several streaks might end with that. But anyway, just wanted to send our thoughts and prayers to the Gilbert family for Dwayne's passing. Maybe the one of the greatest Bulldog fans of all time. All right, moving on to kind of a tougher subject. Earlier this week, we found out that Bakari Rambo, we came across a police report that he was accused of rape. This was a Monday, I guess, early afternoon that we got the police report, and he wasn't arrested on it until later that night. I know, Mark, you've had some back and forth with the police department. Do we know anything further than what we had on online?
We'll talk about that in a second. We have some breaking news, not related exactly to Georgia, I don't think. NCAA Board of Governors has expanded the Confederate flag policy to prevent any NCAA championship events from being played in states where the symbol has a prominent presence. The policy previously barred the awarding of sites determined in advance of a championship in states that display the Confederate flag. Mississippi is the only state currently affected by the association's policy.
Okay. See, that's why I mentioned the Georgia state flag earlier, because it's technically the flag of the Confederacy, though it doesn't have the Confederate battle flag on it. I mean, it's kind of, its image is a lot like the Confederate battle flag or the Confederate flag in general. So, to me, that would raise questions about Georgia.
You know, they say Mississippi is the only state currently affected by the
association.
Yeah,
I get that. I get that. But that's why I was mentioning Georgia's flag earlier. But anyway, back
all
to
right,
going back. Go ahead.
Well, I'm sorry. What were we saying about McCarver? Obviously, I mean, I don't even know what your question was again. But I will say this. Yeah, I mean, it's a sad situation. I mean, I didn't check today, but I believe he's still, after I checked yesterday, I guess it was, he was still incarcerated, and, you know, there was no, was not released because they didn't set a bond for him at all. So, charged with felony rape, and was just on the Georgia support staff the last two seasons. He was listed in the spring media guide as still being on staff, but I checked with Georgia the day before he was arrested because he was already kind of considered a suspect at that time, and they said, Georgia did, that he, sometime after the Sugar Bowl, was no longer, you know, still was in school but wasn't with the program per se. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else you can really say about the situation except, you know, it's terrible.
Yeah, that's all we can say about that, and I guess maybe he'll get a trial out of it. I don't know where they go from here exactly, but yeah, just a bad situation all around. Why don't you say we move on to some decent news, some really good news actually, that the NCAA has set a timetable for college football's return with a 6-week preseason plan where I guess practice or at least 8 hours a week of weight training, conditioning, and film study can start July 13th to 23rd. So I guess this means that initial workouts are getting positive feedback with the restrictions and all that coming out of NCAA schools. But I know there's been some hot spots, for instance, like Houston has had an outbreak and had to shut down for a while. But is this the steps that you feel like are correct to get back to playing football on time this year?
Well, I mean, they certainly need a certain amount of time, and you know, I think coaches have talked about mid-July, so it's kind of along the lines of that. I mean, you saw yesterday that you know, Anthony Fauci came out and said that he didn't see football being played this fall unless they're kind of a bubble situation like some of these pro teams are doing.
Right.
Obviously, that's not happening in college football. They're not going to be isolated. They're going to have classes in person, presumably. I mean, Georgia hasn't announced yet exactly what they're doing, but they're not coming here just to play football. You know, whether some of it's virtual, I'm sure a lot of it will be in person. You know. We'll see how it plays out. I mean, you know, I think everyone's optimistic that the season will start on time. Will there be disruption? Probably. I mean, you're seeing Texas announce that there's like 13 players somewhere in that neighborhood that had tested positive. So the schedule is now Georgia, since they play on September 7th, which is a Monday, it's actually a couple of days back. Like Georgia, instead of starting on July 13th, having this 8 hours a week of weight training, conditioning, film study, they'll start on the 15th, and then you know, workouts then will include walkthroughs on the 26th for Georgia. August 9th then would be the preseason practices beginning for Georgia, 2 days behind others that start on the 7th, or rather the 5th of September. So you know, that's kind of what it looks like, and will be a different type of preseason and a different type of season.
Well, I think the word fluid is continually thrown around, and I think we're still in that situation as we've seen spikes in coronavirus cases in Florida, some here in Georgia, other states along the what they call the Sun Belt, I do believe, have seen some spikes in cases as states have opened back up and people are out mingling again. So, again, people are just going to have to, I mean, if you want football this fall, you need to take precautions, but I don't know that people are. Let's get to Scott Cochran. You wrote another piece on him. I know you talked to a lot of people, like Sam Pittman and others, talking about what Scott Cochran can bring. And it wasn't just a ploy by Kirby Smart to get Cochran out of the weight room of Alabama. I mean, a lot of people seem to think that Cochran can do a really good job at leading the special teams.
Well, I mean, I think Kirby just wanted him on staff any way he could get him, and you know, he had the opportunity to kind of you know, see how he wanted to mix up his staff. You know, when you know, he hired Todd Monken You know, I don't know if there was an understanding between Kirby and James Coley when Monkey came aboard that said, you're going to find a job somewhere else and we're going to, you know, still have an opening. Or, you know, if that was the case, if Coley was going to stick around at Georgia, then you wouldn't see Cochran here, obviously. But, I mean, you look at what happened with Brian McClendon in South Carolina. He was demoted in terms of being offensive coordinator. He stuck around for the spring, but then he bolted for Oregon. Where he is now on staff there. So, you know, a lot of times if a guy loses a position, even if he has the opportunity to stay on staff in a different role, he wants to just maybe pick up and find a different scene. And regarding Cochran, you know, when that opening was there, that's the way he found to get him on staff. And Cochran had expressed a desire to Nick Saban that he wanted to not just be pigeonholed as a strength coach, that he saw himself. And, you know, you mentioned Pittman. You look at a guy that was sort of just viewed as a position coach, sort of like, at LSU with Ed Orgeron, you know, maybe some unconventional moves. A guy doesn't necessarily have to be a coordinator to be a head coach. I think Cochran does have a desire to become a head coach one day, and he has some of the traits in terms of leadership, in terms of passion and energy, maybe more than X's and O's, and I'm sure he's learning all that about what it takes to coach special teams. And Kirby said, special teams comes at, you grab a guy from here or there all over the roster, and Cochran's worked with all parts of the roster at Alabama, running their off-season programs. So we'll see how it plays out. Kirby, I think, always has a kind of a big role on special teams, along with defense. And I think with guys on staff like Todd Harley, other guys that have been special teams coordinators and had a big role in it, it'll be an all-encompassing, everybody pitch in type of deal.
Well, I know that it was said that, Cochran ultimately wants to be a head coach one day, and we'll see where this maybe getting his foot in the door as a coach position, where it could lead. One thing you broke the other day, you were maybe just a little bit ahead of everybody, was about the athletic department coming back little by little. So I guess that's kind of a move back to normal, because I know Greg McGarrity said, they get a lot more out of face-to-face meetings than Zoom meetings, where calls might be dropped, somebody's talking and they're on mute and the like. But, I guess they're slowly starting to filter back into the Butts Mirror building now.
Yeah, it's not just the Butts Mirror building. I mean, you have the basketball staff and Tom Crean's staff back over at the practice facility over there, and some of them they obviously haven't been together since the SEC tournament. And then they had some staff moves when Steve McClain came aboard, when they had an opening, and he finally just got here from Chicago, working almost 2 months. He's familiar with Crean, he's familiar with some of the support staff. And now he's finally in Athens. And, regarding athletics, it's a phased approach. I think the number is about 75 that are back, for the most part, on a closer to a full-time basis, although they can still peel off and work at home, if they can, in terms of, if they don't need to be in the office, it's probably best that they stay working remotely. So, it's a part of the university's kind of gradual return to campus, and athletics is just a slice of that.
I was going to get to Steve McClain a little later, but since you mentioned him, it seems like he has even more energy than Tom Crean. And we know Tom Crean is a guy up and down the sidelines, got his Fitbit watch, counting his 25,000 steps a day and whatnot. But you talked to him on the phone, Steve McClain, who's, like you mentioned, the new assistant who has coached with Tom Crean in the past at Indiana. Did he seem through the phone to have that same type of energy, and what will he bring to Georgia basketball?
Now, Tom Crean said he had more energy than McClain had more energy than Crean.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna say that. I'm gonna say Crean is still got a little bit more caffeine in him than McClain does. Maybe because that's because he's a head coach and he kind of has to be like that. But yeah, I mean, he's probably pretty much the same kind of DNA and the same kind of that's why they've been working together for the second time already at Indiana for 5 years, and they probably see things the same way. And good to have another guy on staff that's been a head coach, at Illinois Chicago, at Wyoming, also in the junior college ranks at Hutchinson Community College, where I think he's part of two national championships on the junior college level as an assistant as well. They getting ready. Basketball will also, in late July, the NCAA gave the green light to get back together and do some required team activities. So that's the next step for that sport.
Right, and I know that in the high school level here in Georgia, teams can start, I think, next week, getting back to where they can actually use a ball, maybe go out and throw some passes and all, and we'll see what the NCAA says about that. Why don't we take another break real fast? This is the Bulldogs Extra Podcast from the Athens Banner-Herald. All right, Mark, some good news for former Bulldog Champ Bailey, one of the best two-way players ever at the University of Georgia. He's already a NFL Hall of Famer, but he got word the other day that he will be on the College Football Hall of Fame ballot for the first time. Now, to me, after watching Champ Bailey in the mid to late 90s, he's a shoe-in for the College Football Hall of Fame, correct?
Well, eventually, yeah. I mean, he's going to certainly make the College Football Hall of Fame. The question is he going to make it in the first time around? I'm not sure. I think David Pollack was a second ballot Hall of Famer.
Okay.
No, I didn't watch. I mean, I watched Champ more in the NFL than at Georgia. I didn't. You know, you probably watched more of him back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Who had the more impactful college career of those two?
Yeah. See, that's I was just thinking about that, and that's a tough question. I would say Champ, just because of what he could do. You know, he's a lockdown corner. He was a receiver on offense that could, you know, break a game open, especially on the Donnan bubble screen. But that's a story for a different day. He could also return kicks. I mean, he was just electrifying. And every time, you know, I can remember as a 12, 13-year-old little kid, you know, thinking, you know, get Champ the ball because he can make something happen. And it seemed like whenever they got him the ball, he did. Now, David Pollack ended up being, you know, such a great defensive end and made an impact that way. But I would say of the two of them, if you were deciding that Champ deserved to be a first ballot because of David Pollack being a second ballot, I would say that's a good way to go, because to me Champ would be a little bit better. Now, I don't know. I'm not aware of how they go about deciding this, because I know he's on the ballot along with Syracuse defensive end Dwight Freeney and Darren Sproles of Kansas State. So why would all three of them not be selected if it's just the I guess they're going up against other people. Those are the three that are on the first time, right? So they have to go up against other people that are going for the second, third, fourth time, maybe.
I talked to Jim Bailey back in 2017. He was at a Georgia track meet, he was kind of just being recognized there. And I talked to him about Nicole Hardman at the time, who was just switching sides from defense to offense. And I just pulled up the story that I wrote back then. He was talking about Jim Donnan, and said he wouldn't have, that Champ would not have had 50 catches at Georgia if Donnan didn't allow me to go out there and give me opportunities. And certainly in the NFL, I mean, he made over $100 million in 15 NFL seasons with Washington and Denver. I think he's probably known, it's interesting he got into the Pro Football Hall of Fame earlier than he did the College Football Hall of Fame. But, you know, I don't know if it'll be first time, but I think it'll be there, you know, sooner rather than later. I
also found that there are 99 players and 33 coaches from outside the highest level of college football eligible for induction. So I guess that's who he is going up against. But it'd be hard to find a better college football player than what Champ Bailey was. You know, like I said, made an impact on both sides of the ball and special teams, and was just an electrifying player. Last week, Cole Wilcox, I guess we had done the podcast and could talk about Emerson Hancock, right-handed pitcher for the Bulldogs, who went 6th overall to the Mariners. Cole Wilcox went the next day, number 80 overall, to San Diego. Was about midway through the third round. Now, there was belief that maybe he had set a price, and with this bonus money pool that teams have, some didn't want to maybe pay quite as high a price as he was asking for, but 80th overall to the San Diego Padres. And you know, if both of them, I know Hancock definitely is going to the Mariners, but that's two big time studs that Georgia baseball will lose next year.
Yeah, I mean, no surprise. That's the tough thing about Georgia, is they had those guys at the top of their rotation, and just what you needed to make a run into to Omaha. and you didn't get it for this year, obviously, because of the pandemic. So, you know, that's the nature of that's why you try to recruit well. And you know, Georgia will, as they are, I don't know, are they 8 seasons in now to Scott Strickland? I mean, he's at the stage where he should just keep this thing retooling, and you know, we'll see if they who's next in the pipeline to be able to, you know, be the next Friday night and Saturday night starters.
Yeah, like you said, they should bring somebody in every year that's kind of a big-time star. Of course, I think, well, both pitchers were highly regarded coming out of high school. I think Wilcox might have had a little more shine on him. But Emerson Hancock developed into a really good pitcher, especially his sophomore year. Wanted to mention real fast, golfer Spencer Ralston shot a 2-under at the Harbortown Classic in, what was that, Hilton Head, I do believe. Bulldog, who will return for his senior year second time next year after getting the pass from the NCAA to for any senior that was affected by COVID-19, their season being kind of taken away from them. Anyway, he just dropped a shot, but he shot a 2-under in his first round. He's through 11 in his second round as of about noon on Friday, and he's at 3-under, tied for 53rd. So pulling for Spencer to do well in his first PGA Tour event. So that is about all I've got, Mark, for this Bulldogs Extra podcast. Any other nuggets you want to throw in while we're still on the air?
No, but you know, as soon as we get off the podcast, I'm gonna jump in the car and drive over to Harbortown. don't they have the lighthouse over there?
Yeah.
I'm just gonna go chill out on the beach, go knock back a few, relax, be carefree, and just enjoy a weekend. Is that all possible?
Hey, if you want to risk that, I did see some some boats on the bay there, and some sea dudes going along there, but yeah, it looks like it'd be a fun time.
They don't have any fans on the course, do they?
No. And when I was watching yesterday, it didn't seem like anybody could really have a makeshift type of bleachers like they did the week before at the Charles Schwab Classic, where some houses lining the fairways there of one of the holes had put up some. I don't know if they sold tickets to it, but that was if they did, that was a smart way to make a little bit of money, I guess.
Is Talladega this weekend?
Yes, it is. So 3 wide going 210 miles per hour should be exciting. You go tune in?
I don't No, I wouldn't talk about that part. They're having fans there, I think, though, right?
They had some fans in the stands last week at Homestead. Now, I think it was invited military.
I think they're talking about, like, a significant number of fans this week.
Well, I mean, you got to kind of classify it into a track that can hold 225,000. They're going to have maybe 5,000 there. So,
is it 5,000? I thought it might be, like, 30,000.
It might have changed. I thought the initial reports were 5,000, but that might have been at Homestead last week where they had some invited military, I think, to watch the race. But you might be right. But still, I mean, at a big track like that, I would imagine they would spread out. One thing I did notice last week at Homestead was some fans wearing their masks. So I don't know if that would be required or what the deal is. But, yeah.
Hold on. You're right. It's 5,000. Okay. I don't know where I got 30,000 from.
Okay.
So,
that's what I'm saying.
All right.
Cool,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I will not be at Talladega this weekend. So,
you can drive by it on I-20, I guess, if you're heading that way. Looks like the low Bulldog real fast as of, like I said, noon on Friday is Harris English at 4-under. He's the leading Bulldog. I think there was about 8 of them playing in the field.
All right, that's good to know.
Thank you. All right. Well, that's the Bulldogs Extra Podcast from the Athens Banner-Herald. Thanks for listening. Have a good week, and Mark, we'll talk to you soon.
All right. See ya.